partners, then they will give the ID back to the other. That's how it works. Am I right, Deputy Minister?
No, you're wrong. We're not getting an ID.
Acting DG, Honourable
Riders. Chair, I think that was one of the things I noted when I came upstairs, when I saw all the media that were outside the old Assembly Chamber, and there was none up here. No, obviously there's something in up here.
Also, let me welcome the Office of the Auditor General, that's with us here as well. We have also asked them to come along. They're sitting just next to you on the bill fee. So that, you know, sometimes we knew that chances can be taken, specifically when in such environment. So they are here, and what someone was making the remark that it seems to me everything is not well between all the refused, the difference between the departments and the Auditor General office, they just looked at, and when the Deputy Minister says, no, we don't fight with them, they looked at the Deputy Minister to say, Chief, we are going to wait our chance to talk as such, so that we can then tell the truth. But thank you very much for coming as well, and welcome to the Office of the Auditor General. Acting DG?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. I think with respect to all the comments, there's a lot of comments that I think Deputy Minister managed to cover them all at a high level. And then I want to suggest that my colleagues clarify in terms of other areas, but in the main, we want to appreciate the comments that have been made, because they're going to enrich our responses going forward, and also our work on a daily basis. We're going to ensure that we integrate them in our plans. Those comments are very helpful for us, but I think there should be some responses in the area of maintenance. I know that there's something that we're doing as a department, which Minister is also going to share with the Portfolio Committee in a detailed manner, because there's a lot of work in that regard. If we were to start that debate, it can take another day or two. But I don't think we'll go that far. I'll ask my colleague, Mr. Maroha, is going to briefly indicate as to what it is that we're doing in that space of maintenance of state buildings. My colleague, also the CFO, is going to cover some of the areas in the area of supply chain and so on and finance. The ICT space also. I want to accept the rest of the comments as very, very fruitful. CFO, you may start, and then Mr. Maroha may add. If there's any of the colleagues who think there's a question that requires to be responded to out of what was asked by honorable members, I think you are free to do so. Mr. Maroha.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Chairpersons. I think the whole topic of maintenance is quite broad, as the DG has indicated. And I think, firstly, let's acknowledge the fact that there is a lot of work that's required to reconceptualize maintenance in the Department of Public Works. And in the context of the role of the PMTE, facilities management and maintenance is a core function in the formation of PMTE. And in that regard, there's been a new branch that has been formed beginning of last year, dedicated on facilities management. And we've been working to develop a what we call an FM turnaround. And part of it includes the funding for maintenance, which then also cross into the issue about the financial sustainability of PMTE. Hence the DG says we are actually developing something that we are currently discussing in depth with the Minister, and then I think in his own time he will be able to to come and share with the portfolio committee in a more comprehensive manner. The only thing that I would maybe want just to answer was the issue about the top 300, which has just come up. And again, maybe just to contextualize that as we talk about the top 300, we're not necessarily saying this is the facilities that we're going to do maintenance on. We're saying we've got 93,000 structures and facilities. Now, as we conceptualize the new way of doing maintenance, we're prioritizing, and the prioritization starts with what you call the top 300. And what we do there will inform what happens to the rest of the portfolio. And I think the question related to that was, what is the criteria? And I think the Deputy Minister has already answered that it's more facilities related to client departments and functional facilities. But more broadly, it's facilities related to what is the core of the PMP and Department of Public Works mandate, which is the security cluster clients, defense, SAPS, home affairs, justice and correctional services. Those in the main are the big facilities that are in the top 300, and it was prioritized on from the regions up in terms of maintenance effort and size of those facilities. So we have a listing that has been built from bottom up. As we say, once we have conceptualized our facility management model, we will then roll out to the rest of the facilities. And this will be based on a prioritized basis. So I think I'll stop there and also just suggest that I think once we've had an in-depth discussion with our minister, he'll be able to come and show the committee some of the things that we're doing to deal with the maintenance and the funding thereof more broadly. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, for some honourable members and the DM, the DG. I'll just try and cover what seems to be outstanding and try and clear that. I think maybe I should just start to the issue of the relationship between ourselves and the AG, although the Minister, the DM, has actually outlined that. But I'm sure the committee would like to take a bit of comfort listening to management's view about this as well, because there's a tendency that things can look good to the Deputy Minister, but behind the scenes, the management and the AG are not actually getting along. I just want to reiterate the point that the Minister has made. I think there's a very collegial relationship between ourselves and the AG, and the issues of disagreement are not substantive at all, are not that large in terms of when we engage. I think we should try and explain the adverse opinion, because the adverse opinion, as in per definition in terms of the standards, it's a disagreement between the auditor and management on something. And how one explains this disagreement is that we had determined a value in the assets of what the value was. The AG made a recalculation and came to a different value, found errors. It is not that we disagree with the error that the AG has found. It is just that we can't amend and adjust that error because the time has passed. And that's where the disagreement comes in. It's defined in that way as in an adverse opinion, because the amount that we have in the financial statements and other ages calculated do not agree. And it's not because of a disagreement as in a relationship. It is not in that context. So I think we work together pretty well, and members can take comfort in knowing that. And the question was, did we know about the expiry of Directive 3? This is a prescribed standard. DM again has responded to it. It's a prescribed period for when you actually do an effective transfer of functions. It's based on 3 years. So it's pretty much known. And we knew about it. In the previous year, it was one of our apex risks. And the question was asked, why is it not in the risk register? It's not in the current year's risk register. Why? Because the Directive 2 is gone. So there's no longer the theme of Directive 2 expiring as a risk. So the issue with the assets remain important, as in ensuring that all the assertions are satisfied, and valuation
remains an important affliction for us to solve. So yes, some of the things you may not find in the strategic risk register, you probably find them in the operational risks. And I think my colleague has tried to create and provide a distinction between, or distinguish between the two as to what is operational, what is strategic. So I think we've tried to incorporate as much as we can. And yes, these things that Honorable Ryder has actually indicated, they are in our operational risks. They are included in the business plans of the different functions, and I'm measured them on an ongoing basis. Then the question of the SCM, the overpayment, because there's issues of value for money, that we are not actually taking those into consideration. I think members will be, have been alerted to the fact that there is a lot of reforms within the public sector supply chain management environment. And one of the critical things in terms of this transformational reforms is the insistence and the focus on ensuring that the test of value for money becomes a critical test. And if you look at the initial SCM processes before in terms of determining an appointment or making an award, it was on two things. One was on determining whether the person can do the job, and that's what you call a functionality test. When you do that testing, get to a score, if the person has achieved a score above the minimum, that's it. They have made it to the next round. And the next round, in terms of the evaluation when you're awarding the tender, is you look at the preference, price and preference. And it's a combination of a price and the preference. And the preference being what's your BE score and what's your BE level. The company that gets the highest BE score based on the fact that they've made the functionality gets appointed irrespective of the price. That was the old dispensation. Treasury now has come back in terms of the reforms. So no. We have realized that we've paid much more than what we were supposed to have been before, because most of this pricing was only based on, or most of the awards were based on functionality and BE, and irrespective of price, you then, because the person who's got the highest score but comes in at 100 million, compared to somebody who's got the lowest score on BE but comes at a price of 50, but both have actually made the functionality, you'd actually have to, or compelled, to make an appointment of 100 million as opposed to 50, when you can actually demonstrate that you can actually get 50, the job done at 50. Which is the actual point that the Honourable Ryder was making around the issues of price and around the issues of value for money. So what the procurement reforms allow is that you can then, once you come to that point, start a process of negotiating with preferred bidders. And part of the negotiations with the preferred bidders or the solicited bidders is this issue of value for money, and that's where we are. So it has been addressed, and I think we've incorporated all of this in our procurement processes, and the issues of value for money will no longer arise. But we've got to be also mindful, and I think you've made the point, Honourable Member, around the issues of having to balance the issue of making an award against the developmental and empowerment imperatives that are there. And at some point, there was some kind of a premium that was headed for. But the point is that premium does not have to be completely out of kilter in terms of comparison when you look at it correctly. So that's what we have. And just on the issue of just to add to what Mr. Marocha has indicated with respect to the appeal, I mean, there was a question around, a pointed question around the appointment of a FM service provider. And I think I want to answer it in the following manner. There's always this issue of tension between, especially when you engage with Treasury, as to whether is it appropriate to incorporate something in your line function so that it becomes part of your employment cost, or do you want to increase your point or your cost of appointing those providers? And the tension arises as a result of when you do an assessment of a country's sovereign, you know, ratings in terms of debt stability. One of the biggest things that the World Bank uses is what is the level of the wage bill of a country. So there's that tension to say, let's reduce the wage bill of the country, but allow some of this to stay. So there's always that tension. And it is not necessarily that you just want to do this thing. It's because at times we've got this level of wage bill, which is our composition of employees, which is limited, and we can't make appointments outside of what we have. So we then opt for, you know, in a way, to try and get the services done with the appointment resource providers. But I think that's that kind of a delicate balance that we have to tread when we consider these things. Over and above the fact that even now you can ask yourself, where are we in terms of the maturity stage of the Department of the PMTE? Are we in a position to have the necessary expertise and capacity to do those kind of things that we have? And in the short term, it may need for us to get an outside person to plug in the gap so that we can move on and move forward. And that's the thinking behind all of this. And I think the issue around the, because I think it's also something that really management should make a statement about, the issue around, you know, the dumping of whatever was in the main board of the department to PMTE. I think the minister has outlined it pretty well. I can just add one or two things. I think one of the critical issues that we had to consider, and that's part of the decision in terms of transfer of the function, is to harmonize the issues of conflict of interest, where one department sets policy, monitors the sector, does all of this, and on the other side, the same department implements. So we have to cluster this function and just to try and harmonize it so that they one can do the other and monitor the other one. And that's not to say the fact that even the trading entity is not outside of the department. It's a trading entity established within the administration of the department. This is a very critical consideration. It is not a trading entity established outside of the department. It's within the administration of the department. You have one minister, you have one accounting officer, which is the director general, and all of that. So that is not being tampered with quite excessively. Then there was a question on the leaf system. I mean, why don't we have systems to roll out and just to make appointments, applications on the system? I think the issue is we've got to be, remember, we operate within a government system. The government system operates with one system called the person system. That's the system that's there. You cannot in government department come in with a different system that runs your HR parallel to your person. The person is fairly regulated, it's there, managed by the Department of Public Administration. So it's fairly fixed, that's what it is. So all of these things that we are talking about in terms of systems, generated leaves and all that, I think that was the intention that was there with the, you know, the Treasury's African system to introduce this kind of things to happen. And I think that was the plan. Fortunately, with the maturity of the PMTE in terms of professionalizing itself and moving itself outside of, you know, these kind of legacy systems that we have, we were in the PMTE as part of our entire enterprise resource planning system introduce this kind of thing, like, you know, automated leaves and whatever, because at least you can do that because you are not within the confined to just the personal system. You can run your salaries based on the personal system because, as you know, officials of government like to have one number and there's a personal number, so irrespective, it must be. So we can't temper that, but we can at least hook it up to other systems. And then the chairperson's issue around the activist, why can't we just develop this in-house? Just going back to the history, just a little bit of the history. We actually tried this system to have an in-house developed system in the form of iWorks. And I think it was developed and things moved on with the advent of PMTE becoming a trading entity and having to account for in a different basis to your modified cash and all that. And iWorks was not very quickly to be able to do that. We then decided, because there was issues of time, that we had to move and get the compliance in place. We thought to develop in-house will take time. Let's get something in the intermediary period that can get us to a point where we've introduced proper GLAP accounting, and that's why we went Akiba Street. And that's the reason. This is not withstanding the one thing that I want to mention, is that software developers are very hard to find by in this country. And in actual fact, that's really one of the things that you said about Akibas and the service providers' lack of performance and all that. It wasn't out of because they wanted not to perform. It was because of the mobility of the experts who are software developers in this area. They move from one point to another. So if you look at Akibas Sage system, it's become the most prominent system within government and outside of government. So there is a competition for the resources of people who can do this kind of thing. So you have them today, you're gone tomorrow. You have them today, you're gone tomorrow, and they come at a price, and as they move around, the prices goes up. So that's the challenge that we've had in the recent past, and that's why this kind of delay that we've had. But I think the point that the chairperson makes is fairly valid. We are developing in-house people to actually be the drivers of this. In actual fact, most of our IT in the past was run by consultants. We've converted most of those consultants to employees in the department who are now employed and will be the ones who do the maintenance, one-way maintenance of the city. And the issue around the security issues around Akibas, I think that's a well taken point. I think the minister when he took office, that was one of the first things he raised himself. That, you know, these are Sage and Akibas, American systems, they can be hacked, and that's very true. But I think it is the mitigating actions that you take to deal with those kind of things. Having the appropriate firewalls, having the appropriate cyber security apparatus hooked up to this. And I think our IT environment within the PMT has matured to such an extent that we've actually managed to have those things in place. The appropriate firewalls, the appropriate security, cyber security strategies in place, and we have them. And at least to try and mitigate the exposure that the chairperson was talking about. I think that should deal with most of the questions. Or maybe I can just answer one of the questions, or maybe make a comment on one of the questions that was also made. There's a comment about, you know, did the CFO not know about these things? Why did he not deal with these things? At the right time, some kind of function. I think it's important to, you know, just share with members, you know, the construct of the department. It's a fairly comprehensive, large department where functions in this department are at the senior management level. And there's people who take responsibility for instance, leases. You have a DDG responsible for leases, facilities management, information registry services, all of those things. So across us, we share a lot of responsibilities. So in a way to inculcate the spirit of accountability, we've actually put it and said, you know, wherever issues arise, the responsible line executive will take accountability for those kind of things. And that's the principle that we are operating under. We'll take the responsibility jointly and thoroughly as the expo, but to deal with these things, each one of us must deal with the aligned parts of responsibility. So that's the spirit. And I'm just saying this, why? Because I'm sure I'll be shut down by my colleagues, or I'll be hailed outside by the other CFOs, because I think it's on my talk that we need to clarify as well as we go along. Because CFOs are a very difficult position in most cases. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Some of the questions are addressed in the question and answer document, as already indicated by the Honorable Chair. So I will want to be guided from the Chair as to how do we take the process forward, because we do have responses in the document provided to the committee.
Honourable members, thank you, DG, Acting DG. Honourable members, first of all, I really don't want to cut time and I don't want to take away your right of speaking as such. But there's a three-line work that starts at 2 o'clock today. And we have been asked by the Office of the Chief of PC that all members are in the House at 2 o'clock. When the Speaker enters the chambers, all members to be present at 2 o'clock. Not members coming at 10 past 2 because there will be voting going afterwards, taking place afterwards. That's the one point. The second point is, I think that the questions has been sufficiently answered in this document. I really don't see the need, unless you can convince me otherwise, that we should still ask more questions or for clarity and that is in this document. I think the department has done a good job in answering questions specifically in this document, which we have then posted to them. So I would say, or I would advise that we go through this document again, and if there's any other question that you feel that has not been answered, to give it to the Secretary, to Nola, and Nola will then forward it to you, Acting DG, to your office, for response and for answering in that regard. If that is okay with you, members. Like I said, I don't want to suppress you. It is your right, it is your committee to speak, but we should also balance things out so that I don't want to bring you into trouble as well for walking into the house at 5 past 10 past 2 and you say, but I haven't even had proper tea or lunch or something to that effect because the chairperson has kept us busy. Mama Noko?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Deputy Minister, members, honourable members, and the entourage from the department. I do agree with the Honourable Chair that we can go through the remaining questions and answers that have been given, and I should also commend the department for this presentation that we got here. To me, it is okay, quite good. But I also want to commend them on realizing that the department is now at 92% on paying contracts within 30 days. Though, in fact, we are striving towards 100, but there is a mark that has been done. It's not bad, but we are saying, let's go and push again more so that at the end of the day, we find ourselves at the 100%, because that is what we are striving towards. Just to quote on slide 42, it's not a question. No, it's just to say on the presentation, not the question, on the presentation. Just to say, having said the document is quite good, we agree with it. But if you look at number one, which talks about contracts were extended and modified without approval and so on, then the root cause there says contract management. Just to say contract management, it is just not enough. Because to me, these documents on how we are supposed to do things have been there for many, many years, but we are not in the position to follow them. So we should be explicit there to say, how are we going to do this? And another thing is the will to implement what we are having. This is good, but it needs people to implement it. As I'm saying, most of the things, the policies that we are having here, they've been there for many, many years ago. But we're not in the position to implement them. If we can have that will to do so. Thank you.
Romanoko, on the next page, 43. The first one, they don't give that route on the expected outcome. And they said the time frame is the 31st March 2018. So we need to call them then and say, hey guys, we have not delivered onto them what you were saying. Thank you, Honorable Masiela. Welcome back, Honorable Sultani. I hope that the UDM has made their mark on the students and has not been usurped by the TA or by the EFF as such. Honorable Sultani, the way forward was that we have dealt with the presentation as such. The questions, because the House is sitting at 2 o'clock and it's a three-line work for all parties to be there as such and those things. And we have been requested that for members not to arrive late, but for committees to end on the settled time, for members not to go over. The questions, as I've indicated earlier, has been answered quite well, and well specifically in the responses from the department and as such. Even Honourable Ryder has agreed that it has been answered very, very good. So if Honourable Ryder has agreed, then I don't think I need to...
What a lovely different.
To disagree in that regard. What I want to do is I want to give the Auditor General about 5 minutes just to respond and to confirm or deny or anything like that, and before we close, Office of the Auditor General. You can't come from Pretoria and do nothing yet. No, it doesn't work that way.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. We take note of the action plans that management have put forward today. We will engage with them, also taking into consideration the fact that you are you are left with 5.5 months before the end of the financial year. So it is actually quite important for management to place focus on implementing these action plans as soon as possible. Now, the other thing that I think it would be injustice not to address is the relationship that we have with management. I think this is a safe space then we can talk the truth, CFO. We do have a good working relationship. I do have to go back and work with him and he pays my invoice. But honestly, we do have a good working relationship. It is a complex audit. It is very challenging. We have robust engagement. And on the issues that the Deputy Minister has raised on EPWP, we have engaged with DPME on that. We are still in the process of engaging with the National Treasury as well. So we are hoping to come to sort of an agreement before the end of the financial year. And lastly, as we spoke with the committee when we were here on the 3rd of October, we did say we will give regular feedback, quarterly feedback when we do our key controls within the department. So we do hope that those engagements will happen. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, Matt. That's the Office of the Auditor General. Honourable Peak.
Yeah, I'm hoping, I'm not saying I don't believe the statement by the Auditor General, but that statement seems to be made under duress because when the Auditor General was speaking, the CFO went close.
In that regard, we can always appoint an ad hoc committee or a committee. let me thank the Office of the Auditor General for your concise work, but also for the time that you've given, that we can always engage with you. And remember, we have said that we will have a quarterly engagement so that we do our proper oversights over things and over the department as such, because I always believe that, and I'm of the fact that if the department fails, then all of us fail, because then we are not doing our proper oversight duty over them, and over the executive, the minister, the deputy minister, and the whole of the department. And that's why it's important for us as a committee to see that the department do good and always do on the outcomes and what they have put there and what the committee has also put there for them and what they have put there for themselves. So in that regard, let me give to the DG to, if you want to take a parting shot or closing remark or something. Acting DJ.
I thought, Chair, you are closing. I want to thank the portfolio committee for the constructive manner in which you are guiding us. We will ensure that we don't disappoint. We do our work. Thank you.
You see, I grew up in a household where my father was a preacher, and he always had the last word to say, let me give. So I decided when I was still small that I want to give everybody a chance to speak, because in a preacher's house, there's no democracy. You know? Deputy Minister?
No, thank you.
Okay. Now, let me thank the Deputy the Department and the leadership of the Deputy Minister today, the acting DG, Advocate Sam Bukela, and all his DDGs, all his directors, chief directors, or chief directors, directors, assistant directors, deputy directors, and what directors, he's still acting director, general, deputy, general, and everybody, even our members of parliament, PMG, chief of staff, the whole lot, our staff from parliament, thank you very much for wonderful work that you guys are doing, Naola, Ines, and Shoaib. Thank you very much for the wonderful work that you guys are doing and delivering for us. We hope to see each other next week over the Parliamentary Villages Board, that we've got PMTE and engagement in terms of the Parliamentary Villages Board. Sorry, ma'am? No. Next to Mokoro. Oh, okay. You didn't want to. So that we can then further engage in terms of, because members have got massive problems, Deputy Minister, in the Parliamentary Villages Board, and the amount of money that's been wasted there, it is really a great concern. Guys, travel well, and do what you can. There's one thing in life you must always remember. Don't overdo it. Just do it over. God bless you. Thank you.
No problem.